Creative Control with Vish Khanna.
Hello. On the program today, one of my favorite drummers of all time, Britt Walford from Louisville, Kentucky. Used to play in a band called Slint. Still sometimes plays with Slint. He's got a new band out called Water. They just put out a record called This World. And this conversation is ostensibly about that, but we also get into a bunch of other stuff. Lots of stuff about Slint and growing up in Louisville. We talked about the Misfits and Samhain and Special Numbers. Will Oldham comes up briefly. The new Slint documentary, Breadcrumb Trail, which is really fascinating and revealing. And just a whole bunch of other stuff, too. Slint box set. Talk a lot about the Slint box set. Bob Weston and his job remastering Spiderland, the 1991. Oh, that's the box set. Sorry. It's really a box about Spiderland. Anyway, good conversation. And, you know, Brian McMahon of Slint was on the show. If you follow the show, he was on just a few months ago, and that was an interesting conversation. This is a nice kind of follow-up for me. So, if you're a fan of Slint, or even if you're not, you will learn things. Here it is, myself and Britt Walford. Hey, this week's episode is brought to you by Pizza Trocadero. For my money, the best pizza you can eat in Guelph, Ontario. A proud, independent family business run by a punk rocker, Trocadero only uses a rich array of fresh ingredients cut by hand and homemade dough made daily, all baked to perfection inside of a stone oven. It's gourmet panzerotti, calzones, wings, salads, garlic bread, breadsticks, and oh man, the pizza. Personally, I like the gourmet Domateo with goat cheese, artichoke, roasted red pepper, mushrooms. I sub out the turkey breast for eggplant, but that's just me. Wash the whole thing down with a Brio? Man, I am getting hungry just talking about this. Call Pizza Trocadero at 519-829-2444. Visit them at 7 Municipal Street in Guelph and online at trocaderoguelph.ca. TrocaderoGuelph.ca. That's Pizza Trocadero, a place of the good trade. Britt Walford is a world-renowned drummer who lives in Louisville, Kentucky. In the 1980s, he played in notable bands like Squirrelbait, Maurice, and for a spell, in The Breeders. Walford is best known, though, as a founding member of Slint, who initially had a short lifespan, but whose second LP, 1991's Spiderland, is easily one of the most enigmatic and greatest American rock albums of the 20th century. Spiderland was recently reissued in a super deluxe limited edition box set, prompting Slint to do a small run of American and Canadian shows. At around the same time, a new band featuring Walford and multi-instrumentalists Zach Riles and Tyler Trotter surfaced with a new album of their own. The band is Water, and their latest record is a sprawling, ambient post-rock thing called This World, which is out now via Temporary Residence. Here now to discuss some of these things is Britt Walford. Hello, Britt. How are you?
Hi. Doing good, thanks.
Now, where in the world are you, Britt?
I am in Louisville, Kentucky.
Nice. Are you outside? I heard a crow. I hear birds screaming.
Yes, that's what we do here.
You make the birds scream.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to ask you, first of all, about Water, how it came to be, where it came from, how you guys came together. Can you tell us a little bit about this band?
Zach and Tyler had been playing together for about a year or or a little more when I met them, and kind of just, you know, we talked about, Tyler invited me to come play with them sometime, and so then I did, and yeah, that was pretty much how we came together. They were already, you know, had already started working on most of the songs that ended up being on the record.
And did they play in a band together before?
I don't think so, no.
Okay. They have been in bands themselves that people might know.
Yeah, Zach is in Grails, mm-hmm. and Tyler was in a band called Strikeity here in Louisville.
Sorry, what was the name?
Strike City.
Oh, okay. And you're familiar with both their projects?
I was familiar with Grails. I wasn't familiar with Strike City.
Okay. Do you consider yourself sort of plugged into whatever's happening in the Louisville music community or scene these days?
No, not really. I mean, I'm a little more aware than I've been at times over the years. So there's definitely some bands here that I really like seeing, and I have been going to see more shows lately. There's like really cool places to play in town these days, and actually a lot of bands from out of town come through, which is a pretty new thing in Louisville. So
it's not generally a destination people put on their tour itineraries, I suppose.
Yeah, it in the past it wasn't.
And how, when did that start to change, would you figure?
Man, maybe a lot in the past 5 years or so. Not that long.
So is there more of a like local music infrastructure, so to speak? Are there more people putting on shows? I mean, that's probably a big part of it.
Yeah, there's definitely like more venues now. And really cool ones.
Okay, cool. Now, the sounds on the album are pretty fascinating. It has these elements of ambient soundscape, jazz, punk, also inventive folk and primitivism. How would you describe Water and what drew you three together to make this particular music?
That's a pretty good description, I think. I mean, I think that definitely like some krautrock stuff has influenced those guys, and other stuff of which I'm not as familiar. As far as did you ask how the kind of music came about? Or
yeah, in a sense, I mean, you described earlier how you kind of met, but I'm just curious what drew you together musically.
Man, we really just started playing together and kind of clicked, you know. At least I really click with those guys. Like, I just liked how they did things. We seemed to, you know, speak the same language.
And are you primarily playing drums? Are you offering insights in other ways?
Primarily just drums, and you know, when we like arrange things and mix things, sometimes you know, I would have an opinion there. I think that Tyler and Zach did most of the arranging and mixing like on their own. So they are really responsible for most of the record. And also Zach did some songs that are more his songs, although I guess Tyler played on most of those too, where there aren't drums, you know. So that was done kind of with not a whole lot of input from me.
Okay, so did you kind of come into this process a little bit later?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. Definitely.
Okay, and so you... Did the collaboration stem from just, like, hanging out, meeting them, or had they kind of been like, hey, Britt, like, we've been working on this stuff, check it out, what do you think? And then you were like, yeah, I actually think I want to join in here.
Yeah, it was kind of like that, except for when I joined, the songs really were more just like one or two riffs. They hadn't, you know, and that's the thing about the band is a lot of the songwriting happens after the recording. So that was kind of a funny thing for me with those guys is just we would play and they'd be like, okay, that's great. You know, we can... That's good. We'll take it from there. Like, you know, and I'm just used to getting everything worked out and playing live and, you know, and that being the bulk of the song.
Huh.
Whereas they kind of, you know, the recording is really just the beginning of actually, you know, arranging and writing the song.
Interesting. So you basically, you would go. That's fascinating to me. They basically just took whatever you came up with to their recordings, I guess. Like, I mean, how much of it was you live playing together, and how much was it you playing to things they'd established, and then them sort of piecing it together to make songs?
I think a lot of it would be we would play together, but then they would redo some of their parts. So it was kind of like a scratch situation. And then there were times when I played to a recording. And there were times where we used like what we played live more than just the drums.
Right. And have you guys have played some shows now, right?
Yeah, a few, yes.
And how has that experience been?
It's been fun. It's been really cool. Yeah, it's those guys, I kind of like marvel at how much they have to do to make all that music, you know, live. They've got a lot of, you know, a lot of things to do.
Well, in terms of manipulating things or just like they've got a lot of gear on stage. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, they have a lot of sounds to reproduce.
And are you then just mostly playing mostly a conventional drum kit?
Yeah. Yep.
And they've got all this other stuff going on.
Yes.
And so you mentioned krautrock. Is that's where you would suggest is like a launching point for this band? Like for someone who hasn't heard this Water record, you would suggest, well, there's maybe starting with this idea of krautrock makes sense.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
And are there common artists that you three gravitated towards?
I think like Cluster, those guys are really into Tangerine Dream, and I just haven't heard much Tangerine Dream.
Mm-hmm.
I know Cluster is one that we all like and can, and I'm not sure of others.
That's fair. That's fair. When's the last time you were in a proper band, Britt?
I guess it was in the 90s, a band here in town called Evergreen.
This was a band you also kind of joined a bit later in the game?
Yep.
So your role seems to be coming in and saving the band. Whatever band you're in, you come in at the last minute and you swoop in and everything's better.
Ah, man. I think, like, you know, it seems like evergreen. And I don't know. I mean, it seems like evergreen and water could both have different drummers. The Breeders was like totally, I mean, they had written most of the songs, but we really collaborated a lot on that record. Kind of, you know, wrote them after I was in the band, or not, you know, like kind of finished them, I guess. Yeah.
You're kind of used to coming in, though, after a band maybe has established its voice, which is different than probably some of the other bands you've been in, like Slint or... I mean, was that similar for Squirrel Bait or... I mean, you joined Maurice Late, too, didn't you?
No. Maurice was kind of a different band, and then I joined that. I mean, that was more just like... you know, little kids craziness. But I mean, I do like playing with, you know, different kind of music and stuff.
So the last band you were in really before Water, I mean, you've had some recurring activity in Slint and you've collaborated with others, but the last band you were in was like maybe 20 years ago?
Yes, I think so.
Right. So I guess the obvious question is, what were you doing beyond music in that time? And maybe also, why do you suppose you weren't in bands? As someone who has been in a number of bands and was quite prolific, why would you have taken a break, so to speak?
I do think it's kind of can be hard to find people to play with, you know what I mean? Or not, I guess you could make it happen, but maybe I haven't been as good at just making stuff happen. And so, I mean, in some sense, I've heard other people say, yeah, it's a pretty special thing when you find people to play with. And then, I don't know, I like, always come up with stuff on my own, but never get, you know, beyond the initial idea stage, and that just seems like not enough inspiration or something. So
did the way that Slint kind of ended, which is still, I mean, it just sort of stopped, I guess, of it, the momentum just sort of stopped after you'd made Spiderland, but that did that impact you in any profound way in terms of your willingness to work with people and, you know, invest that time and that mental energy into being in bands?
I guess it could have maybe dissuaded me from like really going out there and, you know, trying something like totally brand new. But yeah, I'm not really sure.
It might just be happenstance that you have taken the breaks you've taken and played when you've played.
Yeah. I mean, I think just what I was saying before, as far as like inspiration, probably had a lot to do with it also.
Okay. And have you had other creative outlets, or have you been working in other fields in the last couple of decades?
I had a daughter 11 years ago, and I have gone to university in the past 5 years, which has been really awesome. So I've done those things.
Well, congratulations on both. What are you taking in school, or what have you taken in school?
I've worked on an undergraduate humanities degree, which I'm almost finished with. Yes.
That's at the, is that the University of Kentucky, or?
University of Louisville.
Louisville. Oh, sorry. Okay, there you go. That sounds cool. I took English. I did two English degrees. And yeah, it was fun. I did a master's and an undergrad. It was good. And then I did those in Guelph where I am. And I don't know, I had particular, there were things I had to focus on. Did you have particular things you focus on in a humanities degree? Are there particular, you know, fields or realms that you're interested in?
Yeah. You picked two and I picked literature and art history.
Nice. And any particular eras or focus?
I guess I probably have studied more modern art history, but it wasn't like a period. I can't remember what they call that right now. It was like broader than just one specific area.
Oh, okay. That's cool. And so you're enjoying it?
Yeah. Yes, a lot.
You, as I recall, you tried to go to school. Did you go to two different schools and post-secondary schools and sort of stop?
I went to one, yeah.
One, sorry. Okay. And you bailed for music, basically, right?
Yeah, and I didn't really understand the whole concept of college at that time. Like, somebody years later explained it to me, and I was like, oh, okay, that sounds pretty cool. Like, when I went, I thought it was just, I didn't know any kind of reasoning behind it, so I just thought it was like a scam or just kind of dumb, like, you know, status quo kind of machine.
Yeah. And someone explained what to you? That it wasn't that?
Yeah, they said, you know, well, it's a kind of a Greek concept where you go and you study all that there is to know at this time, like, broadly, and then you kind of choose an area to go a little bit more in depth in. And I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense, you know?
Right. That's cool. That's good that you came up with that realization. I want to delve into your past a little bit more. Do you remember what it was that first sparked your interest in music?
Yeah, I think my dad used to play piano all the time at home. And so I got really charged up by a lot of it. And he played like Beethoven and a lot of other classical composers.
Okay. And did that spur you into playing right away, or were you just appreciating hearing the sound?
Yeah, I did appreciate it. And then I did start piano lessons when I was pretty young.
And how far did you go with those?
I played all the way through high school. So.
Okay. And when did you pick up drums? Because, as I say, you're primarily known as a drummer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was when I was 11.
11, oh. Wow.
Yeah. That was like Brian McMahon, who's also in Slint, was in a band with some other people that I met at that time at school, and like we just kind of started playing with them.
Okay, and your family, your parents in particular, weren't only tolerant and patient with your music interest, they were quite encouraging, right?
They just thought it was okay, you know, like they would take us to shows and they eventually let us start practicing there, and they definitely like let us do it. You know.
Yeah. No, it's very cool. Do you remember what the first shows you attended were? Like, do you remember your parents dropping you off at the shows and what they were?
Yeah, man, definitely. The first show was this show called Rock Against Racism in downtown Louisville at an old place called the Old Galt House. It was an old hotel, and there was like some people who I went to school with, because I went to a school where like the grades went from third grade through 12th grade.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like you know, I guess a punk rock show in Louisville, kind of pretty arty, and there was all different kinds of people there. There was super big people and like pretty scary people, and but my dad and our friend Ed Oldham's dad and maybe Brian's dad, they stayed at the show, so that was the first one I ever went to.
And you mentioned there were bigger bands and different bands. Who were the bands that made an impression on you at that show?
Actually, it was just big people, like big tall guys and stuff.
Oh, I see.
But David Grubbs, I don't know if it was his first band, but man, I'll have to like, I can't think of the name right now for some reason. They played, and then a band called, I think Your Food played that show. Man, I'm having trouble who else played that show at this time.
That's okay. That's okay. I can probably look it up. I was just curious if seeing your first show, you know, how it made an impact on you as a player maybe or as a fan.
Yeah, man, it was really exciting. I mean, like, it was just so exciting. Like, the music here, like, people would just be like, whoa, you know, really just flipping out, you know. So, I think we were really excited about it. And actually, I think, yeah, Languid and Flaccid, the first band I was in, they played that show because I wasn't in the band.
Oh.
That was really cool to see all the older people, like, watching this, you know, these young people.
I can see how that would make an impression on you. And yet, and I have no thesis here, but it's yet another example of a band that you eventually joined.
Yep.
I don't know what that means. I just keep noticing that as a slight pattern. It's interesting.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting that you are...
Evil thief.
No. I think it's that you clearly have things to contribute to these bands, but... You mentioned this earlier about what's been going on the past couple decades. Perhaps you don't have the drive or initiative to actually start something, but once it's established, you contribute greatly to it or something.
Yeah, I definitely used to like work on music a lot and then bring it to band practice and work on it a lot more. And something about doing that by myself is such a letdown compared to working with other people or something.
Hmm. And that could be not only on a creative level, but I mean, do you actually appreciate the social aspect of being in a band?
Yeah. I think a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned punk rock there in your discussion of Rock Against Racism, that show you went to. At some point, you became a pretty massive Misfits fan and a Samhain fan, is that right?
Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
I'm curious what those bands meant to kids like you in Louisville.
It definitely meant a lot to some. I'm not sure how that, you know, fell, like with who and where, but yeah, that was definitely... We were super into the Misfits, and then Samhain, you know, some of us were also. I guess that felt kind of like post-hardcore, which that was kind of the big change when we were really young. First, it was more like, you know, arty punk rock, and then hardcore seemed a little different, although, like, the same people would come to the shows for the most part, or some of the time. So.
Yeah, one of the reasons I ask is because my understanding is that, I'll just flat out ask you, are these bands the reason why you would have bonded with people like Will Oldham as well?
Yeah, he wasn't around as much in at that time. He was Ned's younger brother. He's my age, but we didn't hang out. Like, he kind of did his own thing.
Okay, so you didn't know him super well.
Yeah, not until later, and then we got to be much better friends.
But it sort of has come to pass that you probably were in the same room watching Samhain or the Misfits at some point.
Oh, totally. Yeah, by the time we were into Samhain, Will was definitely involved in our group.
So what was it about Samhain and those folks that sort of resonated with you?
Man, I'm sure just what the same thing that resonates with a lot of people, you know, just the gothic or whatever it is. I mean, good songs, you know, liked his voice and the drumming.
And yeah. There is kind of, am I wrong that some aspects of, you know, some iconography, some numerology that is associated with those groups has carried over in your work in other places?
I mean, it's always just been kind of a pet thing, I guess.
There's the new Slint Spiderland box set had a limited edition of 3,138.
Yeah.
Why is that? What does that mean?
It's just like a throwback, basically.
Right, it's a throwback to what? I asked Brian this, and he would not tell me. And he told me to look on the internet, and I looked a little bit, and I'm still thrown. And I figured since you and I are speaking now, maybe you can open the door for me here and just explain. Because I'm sure I just missed something. I know there's something here. And I thought it was maybe connected to the Misfits Samhain stuff.
Let's see. I think you're picking up on something there. I would, you know.
That's what Brian said. You're on to something. It's a riddle. It's a mystery. You don't want to tell me. All right. I got to keep digging here. All right. That's fair. But can you at least tell me, is there some through line between Misfits Samhain and you guys in terms of that numerology thing?
I can see the same things that you can see right now.
Oh, man. All right. It's like I got to become a crime fighter to figure this out. All right. I'm going to solve this, I think. It's going to take up most of my day, but I'm going to figure this out. Now, in the recent documentary Breadcrumb Trail about Slint, it's revealed that you once defecated inside of a cup that once held someone's drink in it. And I'm curious if you can walk us through that story and also explain what it's like to defecate inside of a cup.
It's pretty much just how it was told, I think.
It seems like an odd... What really comes through in this film is that you had a very wild and silly side to you as a kid. Are you suppressing that now? Is that just something that was a result of adolescence?
I guess, you know, I'd say I was influenced by other people as well, but just same as anybody else, I think, you know.
Now you say same as anybody else, but I actually know someone who did something very similar to you. I think
yeah.
That impulse is not necessarily the same as anyone else. Did you get that idea from someone?
No, it was just, you know, just another contribution to the canon of joking around, you know, basically.
Did you have, did you have particular heroes in the realm of comedy?
Well, I guess, not particularly. I wasn't like a comic buff for sure. I think some of my friends were more, but I guess my grandfather, he was a big, just kind of funny person. Yeah.
Okay, so it might also be a familial thing. It seems like a lot of your influences are actually within your own family.
Yeah, that's, I think so too.
Yeah. Are the it's always refreshing when people who make music that could be construed as serious turn out to be kind of fun, have great senses of humor. Are you finding that in Water as well? Water, I would suggest, maybe makes a serious kind of music, but do you find that there's a lot of, you know, you're obviously getting along with everyone, but do people like to have fun in this band?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's really cool to meet. I mean, I guess it's the same. I don't know why it seems that way, but when you're younger and you meet kind of like-minded people or people you have things in common with, it does seem kind of, I think, you know, like, oh, wow, it's really neat, you know, like, it's not just everybody, you know, there's just certain people you kind of have common interests with and hit it off with. But then like meeting younger people that way seems kind of more surprising for some reason to me, just because it seems like a lot of the younger people have just been kind of, not had common interests or hit it off with. And I guess it's just maybe it's just because you like all younger people, like, oh, they're cool, you know, but then some of them, you know, don't end up, are just as different from you as, you know, older people.
Is there a significant age gap between you and Tyler and Zach?
It doesn't really seem like it, actually, at all. But, I mean, they are a little younger, like, so they're kind of part of a different generation here in Louisville.
And are they, they're obviously were aware of your work before you guys started collaborating, but are they from Louisville? Were they familiar with, are they intimately firsthand knowledge of the history of that city and the music there?
Definitely Tyler, and both Zach and Tyler, maybe not quite as much Zach, because Zach came from a different place. He grew up in Florida and then spent a lot of time here as a young person. I think he moved here when he was 13. I could be wrong about that, though. So he had, like, I think maybe he had heard Slint before he moved here. So, yeah.
But you haven't talked too much about it. Like, with each other, you haven't really been... it's not probably something that you would articulate necessarily to one another.
As far as, like...
familiarity with each other's work. Like, do you have conversations about your appreciation of what they've done in their past, and did it happen sort of vice versa?
Yeah, definitely. We have had conversations like that, yeah.
Okay. For years, it seemed that Slint was always going to be this mysterious band that few people knew a whole lot about, and that's changed over the last little while. I mentioned this very revealing and excellent documentary, Breadcrumb Trail, about the band and about Louisville at the time that you guys were together. I'm curious, what has sort of prompted you all to open up a little bit more about what I described earlier as something of a mysterious band?
What prompted us to?
Yeah, I mean, I understand Lance Bangs asked you to participate in this documentary, but after so long, and I might be wrong about this, but from my perspective as a fan of the band, I mean, I didn't really know a whole lot until recently about how the band functioned, where it came from, why it went away, that sort of stuff.
Uh-huh. Man, yeah, it was just totally because Lance hung around and, you know, asked us questions, you know. That's definitely the only impetus, you know, or the only reason we did, I guess.
So over the years, no one has taken as much of an interest in finding these things out the way Lance has?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's interesting. It wasn't out of some, you didn't have any aversion to talking about these things.
No, I didn't.
That's interesting. It's just interesting that no one, because you've done interviews over the last little while, right? I mean, have you not really?
No, huh. I don't think so. Maybe a few with Evergreen. I don't recall any.
Okay, so it wasn't a purposeful sort of shutting people out. You just, no one approached you.
Yeah, I think so.
Huh.
Yeah,
that's really interesting. What role did you actually have in the Spider-Land reissue?
I was kind of working on it with Todd and Brian and Dave, but Todd Brashear, the bass player on Spider-Land, he kind of took the helm, or, you know, was the manager of it.
And was that simply because he was the most interested in doing it or invested in it somehow, or was it just because that role just fell upon him?
He volunteered to do it, you know, to kind of take it on and be the person that was gonna basically, like, you know, be responsible for making sure something came out of it.
Right. Okay. And your role was essentially advisory then?
Yeah.
Okay. But, I mean, curiously, and correct me if I'm wrong, but has Todd participated? Todd hasn't really participated in any of the reunion activity, right?
Yeah. At the beginning, he was part of us thinking about doing it, and he thought about doing it, and then every time he's decided that he, you know, can't do it, he isn't able to.
Hmm. That's just simply as a player, he's just not comfortable, or?
I think it's most, if not all, or most of it, I think it's just his other commitments.
Oh, okay. Does he play music still?
He does a little bit, yeah. Yep.
Just in town.
Yeah.
Okay. And so there's no, when you most recently did a whole whack of shows and he contemplated it, like, you probably were like, you should do this. And he was just like, no, I can't get out of what I'm working on. Is that basically what's up?
Yep.
Huh. Is it weird playing without him?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's amazing. You would think that, you know, well, somebody can just play bass lines, but I mean, it's like, it's, you know, it's really, really, really been a big change, you know?
Yeah. And it's also interesting that he had such a huge role in the making of this reissue, and he appears in the film, but isn't really part of what I assume are, I mean, I assume that these most recent shows that you've been playing together are kind of celebratory, right?
It doesn't really feel different than what we've been doing. Like, I mean, for me, it's just been a journey of playing the music again. It's definitely like, I'm just now being like, oh, okay, I think I kind of you know, have it now again. Like, so,
right.
You know, I don't know. If we had just played solidly all at one time, I guess it would have happened then. But, yeah, I don't know, man.
Yeah. It's kind I think I hear where you're coming from. In terms of the box set, the reissue, what did you actually make of the final version of it?
Man, I think every one of us was just like, man, this is great. Like, we got the proofs for the artwork, the packaging itself, the box itself, and man, we were really just impressed and liked it a whole lot. Like, so yeah, I was really, really excited about that. That's awesome. It's great.
Now, you've subsequently, the band has decided to release sort of the individual components of the box set into the world, because basically all 3,138 boxes were sold out pretty quickly. Did that surprise you?
Yeah, it did. It kind of did. I mean, it did. Like, we tried to pick a number that would be the right number, not too few and not too many, because we didn't want to have a bunch of them, you know, sitting around. Hmm. So, we were pretty surprised.
And again, this is the better part of my day will be spent trying to figure this out, but 3,138, that's significant.
You have all the information at your command.
Yeah, I guess I do. are there particular, we were talking earlier about how this Lance Bangs and making the film Breadcrumb Trail may have been one of the first instances where someone approached you with questions about the band, and one of the reasons you opened up was because someone finally asked you, I guess. But within the packaging, you've also revealed a lot about the band's process. There are demos, there are rarities. Can you talk about the rationale behind putting that stuff out?
I mean, I think that Todd is it's kind of boring, I guess, but Todd is a pretty avid record collector. He has been at times, so he's a lot more familiar with box sets, and he was the person that was like, yeah, we should put extra stuff in there. And I know I at least was like, man, we don't have anything that, you know, anybody would want to hear, just wouldn't seem like a joke to put in there. So it ended up being pretty neat, you know, I thought.
Yeah, and did it help you in revisiting the album, kind of figure out, like, you've had to revisit it both as a player and as someone putting something out, I guess. Like, did going back, first of all, I mean, who's the archivist? Do you have all those tapes of band recordings and things like that? Or rather, practices?
I don't think so. I had some of it, and then, yeah, Todd and Brian had some.
Right. And so going through that stuff again, did that provide any particular insights in where you are now with the band?
Well, I think the movie definitely did. Like, it just showed me to what degree it was a collaboratory thing.
And were there things, I mean, again, you know, sometimes when you're in a band or working on any kind of project together, you don't stop and talk too much about what it is you're doing or how it came to be. Were there things about the film, or rather, were there things said in the film by your bandmates or by other people that surprised you in any way? Were there conversations that you never had that kind of, well, I suppose not conversations, but were there sentiments expressed in the film that you hadn't encountered before?
Yeah, I think there were. Yeah, definitely. And, yeah. Yes.
Any in particular that you'd like to share? Anything that you thought was particularly insightful for yourself?
Well, let's see. I guess just Dave talking about my contribution to the band and Todd talking about how we were kind of out of our minds or something. I never really thought about it.
What was it that they each said in particular that you're referring to there? Out of your minds? I don't even remember that part. You thought...
Yeah, he just said we would just play something like till the end of time. And it's like, obviously, I don't think we're out of our minds. It sounds like I'm, you know, an idiot for making anything out of it, I guess. But or just, you know, whatever. But I don't know. I just never even thought about it, I guess, that it was weird at all that we would just play stuff as long as we would.
You would play like a part or like you would work on a song for hours, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's how some bands practice.
Yeah.
Have you been in other bands that, when you've played in, like Slint was a bit different than any of the other projects you were in that, in a sense, it was basically your project or you were a co-founder right from the beginning. In working with other bands and practicing with them and collaborating with them, did you notice a great distinction between how they operate and how you would operate in Slint?
Yeah. I mean, it just seemed more the other people's thing, you know, at least before Water. And I like that a lot, you know, like I like playing with the Breeders or Evergreen, and, it just seemed more like their thing, whereas Slint was more like, well, this is what I do, you know.
Mm-hmm. And would they spend as much time on a song as you would have in Slint?
The Breeders was kind of simple, but it wasn't as just riff based, like not as much time.
Right. Okay. So it's fair to say that Todd might have been onto something in terms of how much effort you would put into one song.
Yeah, that's what kind of maybe opened my eyes a little bit.
Right. What were you hoping for when the band asked Bob Weston to remaster Spiderland? What was, you know, when you remaster a record, it's because you kind of want to correct something about the original. Did you have something in mind when you approached Bob about this?
Yeah, I think we just were like, wouldn't that be awesome if it sounded better? But we didn't like the mastering of the original, so we thought it was really bad. The vinyl was really awful, the CD sucked, so we were like, oh, this will be great to finally, you know, get a decent mastering of it. And I thought it was eye-opening just how good the original master ended up sounding after, you know, working.
After working with Bob.
Yeah, after working on it. I mean, what Bob eventually did was really cool and amazing. But... It took some doing. It took some work, you know.
Can you kind of explain or highlight the distinctions between the original master and what Bob has done with the reissue? Like, what to you stands out?
Well, I mean, I feel like a lot of the remaster is due to the machines that it's done on. And I've noticed similarities between the Spider-Land remaster and other remasters that I've heard, like Elton John and this band from Louisville called the End Tables that Drag City put out a record of theirs recently of old stuff. Mm-hmm. And to me, often like it sucks all of the emotion out of the music. It's like there's this vast soundscape or vaster, but it doesn't, things are isolated so that when the band gets loud, and normally when you hear that in a room, or I think like in your head, how you imagine it to sound, like things get loud, they kind of, you know, in some way get noisier, or like they rise and fall. Like on the original Spider-Land, for instance, like things would rise and fall dynamically. But on a remaster, it's like, oh, look, there's a guitar getting loud over there. You know, it's like there's no everything. It's like all of the individual constituent parts have been isolated. So they're all there. But it's as if you had a dinner that was, you know, however much basil you used, and then however much pepper was in there, and then the chicken, and all separately, you know. And that, I'm really curious about that, and I'd love to talk to a mastering engineer and be like, oh yeah, I know what you mean, you know.
Yeah.
Because so far people haven't really seemed to have heard the same thing. So what Bob did is he started there and then, you know, gave it like life and warmth, to my way of thinking. Like he, you know, ran it through some stuff, like maybe some compression and maybe some EQ, that helped it a lot.
Yeah, it's a really nice, subtle remaster. And I think that sometimes when certain mastering engineers get a hold of something and are asked to remaster it, they kind of go to town. And mm-hmm. I think Bob did something very nuanced.
Yeah. And it is really cool to hear the, you know, hear things more and hear the sound stages a lot bigger. And but yeah, I know. I'm glad that you feel that way about it.
Yeah. Well, is there more Slint activity coming up as far as you're concerned?
We have some more shows. Beyond that, nothing is planned.
And you say that you're finally getting a handle on these old songs. Are you any closer to potentially writing together or trying to make something happen again?
I'm not sure, man. You know, we've talked about it, but we just haven't gotten to that point.
And three of you are living in Louisville right now, right?
Yeah.
Is it David's in Illinois or something like that?
Yeah, he's in New Jersey.
Oh, he's in New Jersey. Sorry, I picked the wrong state. I thought for some reason he was in Illinois. Okay, so yeah, I mean, this seems more promising for those of us who would be interested in hearing what the band could do now, I guess. It seems like it's more feasible that something might happen.
Yeah.
Okay. Leaving it at that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And what's next for Water exactly? What do you have planned? There's six songs on this really wonderful record, but what happens? Are there more songs that are being ready or being prepared?
We are working on new material, and we have some shows lined up with Ohm in the fall, in the East Coast and Midwest.
Right. Nothing in Canada yet.
Yeah, nothing in Canada, as far as I know.
Well, we should fix that.
Yeah, that'd be awesome, man.
Okay, and so that's pretty much it up to this point. I mean, that's your working life in a nutshell right there.
It is.
It must feel good. It must feel good to be... Are you someone who likes touring?
Yeah, I love it. I love playing and I love touring.
So this is good. This is a nice outlet for you.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. It is.
That's great. Well, once again, I want to let folks know that the new album by Water is called This World, and you can learn more about it at temporaryresidence.com. And for more information about Slint, they can visit slintmusic.com. Britt, before we go, is there a song from the new Water album that we can play for folks?
I think This World is a really good one.
Okay. Any particular reason why that came to mind? Title track. You went with the title track.
I really like the songs that Zach kind of wrote on there.
Sorry, that who wrote?
Zach.
Oh, okay. This is a Zach song. This is a Zach song. Okay, so we'll check this out right now. This is This World from the album of the same name by Water. Britt, it was really a great pleasure to speak with you, and I thank you for your time and wish you the best of luck with everything.
Thanks. You too, Vish. Nice to talk to you.
Hey, thanks again for checking out Creative Control with Vish Khanna. You can email me about the show at creativecontrol933@gmail.com. That's creative with a K, control with a K, 933@gmail.com. You can also follow our Twitter at Vish Creative, VishKreative. And you can also like our Facebook page. A version of this show airs on CFRU in Guelph every Wednesday at noon Eastern. And you can listen to that online at CFRU.ca or if you're in the KW region at 93.3 FM in Guelph. You can also sign up for the weekly mailing list for the podcast and the show at vishkhanna.com and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. I believe that is everything I wanted to tell you. Thank you once again.